Welcome to the Open Scroll audio series. This is a presentation of Increase Our Faith, the hidden treasure of Luke 17, verses 5 through 19, part 2 of Keys to Developing a Hearing Ear, written by Bob Schlenker and read by Aaron Herman. The hearing ear and the seeing eye. The Lord has made both of them. Proverbs 20, verse 12. In the Gospel of Luke, there is a passage in the 17th chapter that complements the lessons of chapter 8. I previously introduced what I like to refer to as the hear-do cycle, the operative principle of the trending ways of the increasing or decreasing of our ability to hear. This can be equated to faith. There are some truths involved that are rather hidden and that are really quite profound. Most Christians believe that having more faith is the key to a more powerful life. The apostles did too, but Jesus challenged that, giving those who would have a hearing ear more insight into this essential of life. The apostles said to the Lord, "Increase our faith." And the Lord said, "If you had faith like a grain of mustard seed, you could say to this mulberry tree, 'Be uprooted and planted in the sea,' and it would obey you." Luke 17, verses 5 and 6. If all that is required for a spectacular miracle is having faith as small as a mustard seed, which, according to Mark 4, 31 and Matthew 13, 32, is smaller than all other seeds, the concept of the size of faith is clearly not a factor. In verse 5, the Greek word translated increase is prosthithemi, which has the sense of adding to what one already possesses. The Newbery Interlinear translates the request as, "Give more faith to us." The request could not be granted because, to put it in modern vernacular, it doesn't work that way. If scriptures are perhaps flooding your mind that appear to contradict this observation, let me encourage you to have patience. This is worth whatever time and effort may be required to correctly resolve this apparent conflict. There are some fairly technical issues that must be sorted out. Very simply, when someone in the Bible is identified as having little faith, no miracle occurs. Having a little faith means they have as much or more than the smallest amount, obviously. This reasoning informs us that the solution must therefore involve the use of figures of speech, which is a matter for the hearing ear. The Lord's corrective lesson about the request involves a hypothetical example. The apostles said to the Lord, "Increase our faith." And the Lord said, "If you had faith like a grain of mustard seed, you could say to this mulberry tree, 'Be uprooted and planted in the sea,' and it would obey you. Will any one of you who has a servant plowing or keeping sheep say to him when he has come in from the field, 'Come at once and recline at table'? Will he not rather say to him, 'Prepare supper for me, and dress properly, and serve me while I eat and drink, and afterward you will eat and drink?' Does he thank the servant because he did what was commanded? So you also, when you have done all that you were commanded, say, 'We are unworthy servants. We have only done what was our duty.'" Luke 17, verses 5 through 10. The events that follow that rather cryptic handling of their request seem to be unrelated, but yet they represent an extension of the lesson, repeated for emphasis. On the way to Jerusalem, he was passing along between Samaria and Galilee. As he entered a village, he was met by 10 lepers, who stood at a distance and lifted up their voices, saying, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." When he saw them, he said to them, "Go and show yourselves to the priests." And as they went, they were cleansed. Then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice. and he fell on his face at Jesus' feet, giving him thanks. Now he was a Samaritan. Then Jesus answered, "Were not 10 cleansed? Where are the 9? Was no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" And he said to him, "Rise and go your way. Your faith has made you well." Luke 17, verses 11 through 19. We'll give both parts of Jesus' handling of the apostles' request our attention and see how they compare, with the practical example out in the field repeating the instruction of the classroom as a demonstration. The lesson of the unworthy servant, doctrine and theory. The relationship between a master and a servant is a simple one. The master says, "Do this," and the servant does that, at the expected time and in the expected way. It's their duty. The master's obligation is to make their expectations known and to provide adequately for the servant's care and for their ability to effectively discharge their obligations. This situation would have been very common and familiar to the apostles. When digging for buried treasure, one of the tools I have learned to use provides special access to the levels of meaning that depend upon very specific contextual relationships in a passage of Scripture. The biblical text is highly ordered in its linguistic construction. Analyzing this structure and viewing it in a dynamic and interactive way is often very helpful. I encourage you to explore the following presentation of the passage of interest. Luke 17, verses 5 through 19, Increase Our Faith, Interactive, which I prepared for the study. If you need help getting your mind wrapped around what you're seeing here, I recommend the following study, Bible Code Revelations. You may note that while the two parts of the lesson, being the classroom's doctrine theory of verses 5 through 10, and the field's practical application demonstration of verses 11 through 19, do not appear to be connected in the way of symmetrically matched themes, the thread of connection is plain enough when the meaning of the lesson is recognized. The structure of verses 5 through 10, which is the obvious part of the narrative of this lesson about the increasing of faith, may be described in technical terms as a 2 plus 2 chiasm, with the A and B components each expanding into a 2 plus 2 parallelism. You will notice that the comment windows pop up when you click or tap on the colored bars. In the comment on verses 9 and 10, we read, "The Lord understood what they really wanted. Having already addressed what faith is not, he teaches that faith is better understood in the context of the relationship between a master and servant. It's about duty and merit. The strict performance of duty earns a servant their promised wage, nothing more. We are unworthy servants. We have only done what was our duty." Unworthy of what? Of thanks, of some further benefit for their service. You see, they had only done that which was their duty. The valuable lesson is in what is implied, that any increase in compensation or reward is only merited for service that goes beyond duty, for exceeding the master's expectation. In the example of Luke 17:9, what the servant would not receive for the mere performance of duty was the master's thanks, a simple expression of gratitude in acknowledgement and recognition. This is a fundamental and not insignificant benefit. For those of us who have ears to hear, there is in this account the presentation of an opportunity and an invitation, which is the Lord's good pleasure to extend to us by grace. We can gain favor in our Master's sight. We have the opportunity to elevate our status in the kingdom, and there is likewise a provision for advancement through the ranks, as it were. Consider the message of the following passage. And they came to Capernaum. And when he was in the house, he asked them, "What were you discussing on the way?" But they kept silent, for on the way they had argued with one another about who was the greatest. And he sat down and called the 12. And he said to them, "If anyone would be first, he must be last of all, and servant of all." Mark 9, verses 33 through 35. We see in the way that the Lord addressed the 12 how that, instead of admonishing them for prideful ambition, he instructed them in the way of promotion within his kingdom. Again, he used the example of a servant, because the way of promotion involves our willingness to sacrifice for others in our service. He himself set the bar in this matter. The apostles' asking of the Lord to increase their faith does not seem to have been motivated by self-interest as a matter of competitive self-promotion or posturing. I believe the Lord's response reveals that their zealous ambition was to elevate their level of usefulness and to endear themselves to the Lord, enhancing their relationship. I believe that their request was prompted by the Lord himself, so that he could bring forth this necessary lesson for their benefit and ours. This is a win-win for the servant and the master alike. Our master sees and knows each one of us intimately, our motives, thoughts, feelings, and actions, because we are completely transparent before him. If our zeal in seeking the Lord's favor is expressed in the performance of our duty, and then a going beyond that basic requirement to exceed his expectations, this is meritorious service. Some kind of acknowledgement, perhaps thanks, some recognition or honor or a bonus of some kind, or even a promotion in rank, may be warranted and awarded according to the Lord's good pleasure. He is just and generous. The practical reality is that some servants are better than others. If a servant is untrustworthy, lazy, or apathetic, they deserve less than what others do, who faithfully perform their duties. A servant who exceeds the master's expectations deserves more, and a wise master will treat them with honor and promote them through the ranks. In this matter of meritorious service, we should consider how there is a governing kind of law of proportions. "Give, and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. For with the measure you used, it will be measured back to you." Luke 6, verse 38. These matters aren't complicated, but the profound lesson about meritorious service and promotion in the kingdom may take a while to register and sink in. If you pause to reflect upon your own life and the seasons you may have been blessed to experience in the Lord's service, this underlying principle should become apparent. If you consider the lives of other saints you have been blessed to serve alongside, you may discover that this insight explains plenty. The lesson of the 10 lepers. Practical application demonstration. Now let's turn our attention to the encounter with the 10 lepers. The structure here may be described as a 4+4 parallelism, with the A and A prime components expanding into a 2+2 parallelism and a 3+3 parallelism, respectively. In another comment window of the interactive version, we read, "In verses 17 and 18, the Lord repeats the lesson about the increasing of faith with dramatic emphasis. The bonus is for those who go beyond the strict performance of duty." Additionally, we see that the receipt of a blessing is not a matter of having a pedigree or a privileged status. In the most practical demonstration, the way the bonus was merited was by the lepers returning to give thanks and praise. This compares to how it was the giving of thanks that was identified in the hypothetical example, in verse 9, where it's the master's potential thanking of the servant. While the giving or receiving of thanks might seem trivial to some, it's not. The nine lepers were the unworthy servants, according to the language of the classroom instruction. The matter of a worthy servant, which had to be inferred from the earlier lesson, is on exhibit as the one leper returned back. Like the other nine, he had obeyed the master, but he alone went beyond the minimum requirement. He alone went beyond duty, and subsequently received a bonus. It seems likely that the apostles were still contemplating the Lord's response to their request as this scene unfolded in their midst. When Jesus remarked about the Samaritan leper's faith, I can imagine that the apostles might have looked at each other and said, "Ah, now we get it." What great feat had this leper performed to be acknowledged and recognized for his faith? Then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice, and he fell on his face at Jesus' feet, giving him thanks. Now he was a Samaritan. Luke 17, verses 15 and 16. Jesus honored this man before those who were present, and he is further honored before all who read this account. And if this honor extends further in the ages to come, it should be no surprise. If you think acknowledgement and recognition isn't much of a reward, take a look around you and see what people are doing for no other reason. You might ask why the Bible doesn't just explain things more fully instead of leaving it up to us to infer what is so obviously of such exceptional value. This matter of concealing and revealing serves the Lord's purposes, as you may recall from earlier in this study. And when his disciples asked him what this parable meant, he said, "To you it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of God, but for others they are in parables, so that seeing they may not see, and hearing they may not understand." Luke 8, verses 9 and 10. Does the Lord choose some but not others for receiving such a treasure? Certainly, and he is entirely justified in doing so. See scriptures like Romans 9 and 2 Timothy 2, verses 20 and 21. So, while it is true that we have no degree of influence in some matters, in others, we do. And we will quite fairly be required to give an account for our stewardship. This is why we're given instruction and examples to follow for direction and inspiration, and why we're encouraged to persevere. When we read in Luke 17, verse 16, that the one leper was a Samaritan, we should recognize that a point is made about the value of cultural status and privilege. The Samaritans were generally considered by the Jews to be like dogs, a far lesser class of merely wannabe chosen people. The one leper was given honor even though he lacked the pedigree or privileged status that might have qualified him in the minds of many. The Lord was and is no respecter of persons in that regard. He sees us not as others do. His judgment is righteous. When it comes to the topic of the performance of one's duty, we're dealing squarely with the subject of obedience, and therefore with love. And by this we know that we have come to know him, if we keep his commandments. Whoever says, "I know him," but does not keep his commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoever keeps his word, in him truly the love of God is perfected. By this we may know that we are in him. Whoever says he abides in him ought to walk in the same way in which he walked. 1 John 2, verses 3 through 6. If you love me, you will keep my commandments. John 14, verse 15. Jesus answered him, "If anyone loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our home with him. Whoever does not love me does not keep my words, and the word that you hear is not mine, but the Father's who sent me." John 14, verses 23 and 24. There is that as a foundation, and There is the matter of passion and zeal. My son, if you receive my words and treasure up my commandments with you, making your ear attentive to wisdom and inclining your heart to understanding, yes, if you call out for insight and raise your voice for understanding, if you seek it like silver and search for it as for hidden treasures, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. Proverbs 2, verses 1 through 6. Note well the conditions that the blessings are subject to. In summary of the teaching of Luke 17, verses 5 through 19, we found that the apostles had asked the Lord to increase or add more faith to what they already had. But faith doesn't work that way. That which may be given must be earned through meritorious service. The strict performance of duty merits no thanks, honor, or reward, but service that exceeds duty does, and sincere expressions of praise and thanksgiving count. In closing, I pray that this study will help you become more able and more willing to please the Lord, and that you will become a more fruitful laborer in the Lord's harvest field in these last days, bringing glory and praise and honor to him. And he said to all, "If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will save it." Luke 9, verses 23 through 24. And this concludes our presentation of Increase Our Faith, the Hidden Treasure of Luke 17, verses 5 through 19, part 2 of Keys to Developing a Hearing Ear. Thank you for listening.